Weekly text-based Tanya. We are back from our hiatus, our Pesach hiatus. And just checking in with you officially, we finished chapter 37?
Yes.
Okay, great. So we're on? You don't remember it? We'll review it, but we did. I'm asking to attest to the fact that we finished 37. You don't have to remember what it was. Yes? Okay.
Yes, we did.
He stands at the river crying out he wants water. Why don't you just drink? Okay. Right?
No. No river, no water. There's no river, no water.
Well, I know for sure that you said you wanted to go over time to finish it before Pesach.
But no river, no water. I think
we need to start the recording again.
Hold on a second.
This is
a lot. It's not. Okay. This is 38. Someone have a 37. Just for a second, yeah. Okay, here, I got it. Okay. Really? You don't think we finished 37?
We did. We definitely did, but we don't remember.
Oh, but you don't remember.
No, that doesn't mean anything.
But there was no river.
Okay, but it was some other body of water?
You
call upon Hashem by learning Torah?
Yeah, we
call
upon Hashem.
Okay, so that was that. Okay, fine.
But no river.
Okay. Was it?
Okay.
I don't remember. Maybe it wasn't a river.
Maybe there's a field trip.
Okay. No. Okay, we finished it. Okay. So let's we'll start again. Okay. No one has to go through all that doubt. Weekly text-based Tanya. We're back from our Pesach break, our lengthy hiatus, and we're just getting back into the swing of things. Some of us are a little rusty. We just got to get back into our routine, back into our rhythm. Yes, but we certainly finished chapter
37.
Certainly chapter 37 was finished. We don't 100% remember everything it said over there, but we know that we finished it. Okay, and we're starting chapter 38 now. I want to tell you something. I've been dreading this for over a year. Yes. Because today, yeah, I've been dreading this. Yes. 38, yes.
It's the last chapter.
No, 53 chapters. Oh, that's a nice way to look at it. Like, what's to dread if we're... Okay. There are 53 chapters in Likutei Morim Chelek Aleph in the first volume of Tanya. I've been dreading getting to 38 for a while. Because it's tough stuff. Some people, they only learn the first 35 chapters of Tanya. And they stop after 35. Because, I mean, they stop after 34. They don't even go into 35. But I don't have a real problem with 35, 36, 37. That's that Dira B'Tachtonim stuff about the effect that our mitzvahs have, specifically the action of the mitzvahs, how the physicality of the mitzvah affects the physicality of the world and gives Hashem his ultimate desire of a dwelling place in the lower realms. I don't have a problem teaching those chapters. I get excited about those chapters. In fact, I told you that my first chapter of Tanya that really got me excited about Tanya was chapter 37, right? I mentioned that?
Mm-hmm.
It was just a little offhand remark that I made, but so I have no problem teaching those chapters, or I shouldn't say I have no problem teaching them, because who knows? I think that's for the students to judge whether or not I have a problem teaching a certain chapter. I don't have a problem getting excited about teaching those chapters, because I feel like, yeah, I can do this. When I come to chapter 38, basically I'm going to warn you, three chapters, 38, 39, 40, I do feel a certain hesitancy. To state it mildly. They're very technical chapters. If you look at the overview version of this course, you know, where I do, who was part of that? The first version where I would just do when I did not use the text and I gave, you were part of, okay. Yeah, when we went through the map and we took off a year, but we would basically do one chapter per class. And I didn't read text, I just gave overviews. I believe that when we did 38, 39, 40, that we condensed it into one class. I'm not 100% sure, but I wouldn't be surprised if we did. Because I could summarize 38, 39, and 40 pretty well and leave out all the stuff that's difficult. The problem is we're doing it text-based, we're doing it word for word, and there's a lot there that's either hard to understand, or even if I can understand it, it's hard to convey to you why you should care about it. And especially in a group setting where all it takes is one or two people getting bored, and then it's like, you feel the room just becomes heavy. And so it's tough stuff, and it's not, we're not going to do a chapter a week. It's not going to be 3 weeks. It's going to be the next 5-6 weeks probably. So I'm not even sure how to approach it, but I do believe for the sake of authenticity, we have been going through every single word, every holy word of the Holy Tanya. I think we should continue going through every single word. But I'm just warning you, that's what we're going into, okay? And you're going to tell me, after we get into it, into the thick of it, you're going to tell me like, oh, now I see exactly what you mean. All right, so I'll do a summary of where we've been. I'll do a little preview of where we're going. And this part will not be hard. But as we go into the words, it becomes, there's a lot of Kabbalistic taxonomy, like a very, very specific terminologies being used, describing very specific levels. You'll see. Okay. All right. Chapters 35, 36, 37 were about what theme? What was the main theme? Dira Patachtainim? Okay, I'll agree with that. Could you elaborate? What is the Dira Patachtainim and what does it have to do with me? Okay, creating, I'll repeat what you said, creating a dwelling place for Hashem in this world by bringing in more light. Okay, and how is that done?
Through mitzvahs.
Through mitzvahs. Specifically, what aspect of the mitzvahs?
Doing.
Okay, so it's really a big emphasis on doing. And we all understand in the context of this book, that's directed to normal people who will never completely master their inner world, who will never have complete purity of mind and heart. We understand why the emphasis on action is so important, right? Yeah? Mm-hmm. Yeah?
Yes.
Okay. What happens here is, in chapter 38 and 39 and 40, is a pendulum swing, which often happens in the course of a, dynamic study where you are going through different ideas, and establishing different ideas is important, and then sometimes when you... Somebody knocking the door? Yeah? Okay, just make sure it's not a bad guy. Yeah? Yeah? Who is it? Probably just someone who wants to come to class.
Oh, she was in class.
Oh, no, what happened? You got locked out?
Rivka wanted to get you a drink.
Oh, okay. Okay, but she's...
Thank goodness someone with you.
Oh, she's in there.
She's
okay.
Coming out of the closet.
Okay.
I'm good here.
Amazing. Wow. Okay. Everything is resolved. Oh, this is my water? And you got locked out getting my water? Wow. That is devotion. Imagine. That's like... Extra points, yeah. Amazing. Here's my water. You almost got locked out for. You did get locked out for. That's true. You almost didn't get back in, right? Great. Amazing. Thank you. And it tastes even better knowing that so much Mesiris Nefesh went into it.
The light that comes from the dark.
The light that comes from the dark, yes. 100%. Their closet, yeah. People are watching this. Why is she in the closet? Is there water in the closet? There was water in the closet? Or you went through the alley? Through the closet into the alley?
No, the closet has a supply.
Oh, the closet has a supply. Okay, I thought maybe you went through the closet, out into the... Because you can go out into the alley from the closet. Okay, none of this is going to matter to anyone watching online. Okay. And then we have so much excitement that goes on here. If you ever want to know, should you come to Central Avenue and participate live? There's nothing like live because you get this action. That's why someone comes all the way from Brooklyn to get this excitement. Okay. So here's the deal. There's a certain correction that has to happen because we just went and established at length that action, 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 all action. Oh, you mean you're crying because you don't have perfection of the heart and the mind like a tzaddik? Who cares? It's all about action. Okay. Now we have to correct the misconception that somebody might have now at this point that action is all that matters. And we have to tell you, no, kavana also matters. Kavana is the Hebrew word for intent. And it refers specifically to the feelings that you have that accompany your mitzvah. So kavana, the feelings you have that accompany your mitzvah are also important. I will explain to you this correction in biblical terms. This is not my own observation. This is actually from a sicha from the Rebbe Lakuti Sichas Chelik Dalet Parshas Korach, which helped me to understand these difficult chapters. The sicha is basically about why did Korach come along? You know Korach, Moshe's cousin, and he wanted to be Kohen Gadol. He wanted to usurp Aaron HaKohen. He was all upset. And he claimed he was a man of the people, a populist, but really he was just jealous that he wanted the high priesthood. Why did he wait to lodge his complaint until he did when he did? He came along, well, there's Parsha Shlach, and then there's Korach. He came after the Meraglim. Why did he come after the Meraglim? The Meraglim, if you remember, were, well, they came back on Tisha B'Av, B'chiyah L'dayreis, right? That's the ill-fated day when they returned. So, I mean, it's a technical question, but the answer is an incredibly important answer. Why did Korach wait to complain about Aaron HaKohen being the high priest? The charge was nepotism, that, oh, Moshe is the leader, he makes his brother the high priest. Why did he wait until he did to make this complaint? He could have complained back when the appointment was originally made. Like, why didn't he complain right after they put up the Mishkan?
Now there
was
already room for doubt. Right?
Oh, room for doubt, because just
right.
In general things, yeah, with Machlekes, so he's taking an opportunist, he's taking advantage of the weakness. Okay, yeah, that's a general answer, but I have a much more satisfying answer that explains specifically why, if it wouldn't have been for the Meraglim, he would never have been certain that he had a complaint to begin with. So it was a whole year and a few months since they left Mitzrayim, and he didn't lodge his complaint until the Meraglim thing went down. Here's why. The Meraglim thing, in short, was about people who were afraid of entering the land and engaging in actual physical, practical Judaism. That's why they believed that they could have a complete Judaism in the wilderness, meaning they had the Torah already, so they'll learn Torah as concept, and as far as application, they don't have a land. Okay, fine, no problem, so we won't do those hundreds of agricultural mitzvahs. And in fact, it'll be better because in the wilderness we have bread from heaven, we have the mon, and we're taken care of. It's like living in yeshiva, and your parents pay the bills, and you live in the dorm, and you eat in a dining room, and everything's done for you, beautiful. And we're going to enter the land, and we're going to be involved in city building and agriculture and all types of civil engineering projects. Who needs it? And they were dead wrong because, well, you guys just learned chapters 35, 36, 37. Why were they dead wrong? Because what were they overlooking? The most important thing of Yiddishkeit, right? The physicality. The physicality of it, and engaging the mundane world. By the way, I was in Mexico, Shabbos HaGadol, and I finally, a word that I've used hundreds, maybe thousands, probably thousands of times, I finally understood it properly when I was in Mexico, because I was explaining something in my broken Spanish. Yeah, yo hablo un poquito.
Which part?
What?
Oh,
you speak? Hablas Espanol?
Yeah, I spend a lot of time.
Oh, what part of Mexico? Mexico City. Yeah.
With Toby.
Yeah, yeah, we have very good. You know them in Mexico City. Yeah, with Meislish. Okay, very good. All right, so yeah, I was Shabbos Agolo in Mexico City. So I finally understood the word mundane, because I was like, oh, como se dice mundane? Mundano. I was like, mundano. Mundano is like mundo. Yeah, well, I've said the word mundane thousands of times. I've said the word worldly. The word in Hebrew is choyl. Choyl is weekday. That's, you know, if you, and in Yiddish, by the way, you even say, you're like, vochadik, which is funny, like week, why would you call something weekday? Because in, if you understand Jewish context, weekday as opposed to Shabbos. So you call something, Shabbos dick is holy, vochadik is ordinary, right? Not Shabbos. But in English, we say words like holy and mundane. Not profane, but mundane. And I didn't know what mundane meant. I just said, whatever, that's the word we use for choyl. And then I realized mundane is mundano, is mundo. Is mundo, of the world. Well, that blew my mind. So at any rate, in chapters 35, 36, 37, you learned that the purpose of life itself is to deal with the mundano, to deal with the mundo, to deal with the physical world, and to make it holy. And that's what the Meraglim were wrong about, because they thought that that could be avoided. And in fact, that it would be to their advantage to avoid all that yucky stuff. Why get your hands dirty, right? So they were totally wrong. And they were told, guys, Yiddishkeit has to be in the world. We have to enter the land. Don't be afraid of the land. Enter the land. The land, you understand, the worldliness of the land. Okay, so that's when Korach decided that he had a real reason to complain. Because if it's true that everything comes down to action, here's Korach's thought. He said, look, I know, I'm not a fool. I know Moshe Rabbeinu knows more Torah than me. We all go learn from him. He obviously knows more than me. I don't think I know more than him. Not only intellectually, but emotionally. I know that he's more emotionally attuned to godliness. He's more spiritually sensitive than I am. I know that. And Aaron, his brother, too. I know Moshe and Aaron are inwardly, meaning intellectually and emotionally, more spiritual than I am. I know that. But you just told us that it's the action that counts. Everything's action, 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 action. When it comes to action, Moshe Rabbeinu and I, we both do the same action, 613 commandments. We both put on tefillin. I know Moshe has deeper kavana about tefillin than I do, but you just told me the kavana is not the main thing. The main thing is the action. So therefore, why do they have special status? Why are they elevated to leadership positions? Really, we all do the same actions. So that's why he was emboldened at that point. And the correction that had to be made was, we were not trying to say that action is all that matters. Yeah, action may be the main thing that matters, but there's a reason why action is the main thing that matters. And if you understand that reason, then you'll understand that that does not obviate the need for having kavana as well. So the outsides are super important, yes, but the insides are also important. Why? Because the Dira B'Tachtonim essentially is using this world as a place where Hashem's will is revealed, and then essentially everything of this world becomes revealed as an expression of His will. And that's what we call a dwelling place for Hashem. All right, well, chiefly that is done by the bottom line, the action, doing what Hashem wants. However, let's not pretend that this is on a switch. It's more like on a dimmer. It's not on or off, binary. There's a spectrum. And what is the spectrum? You can give, and this is the wording that the Rebbe uses in this sicha, which really helped me to understand it. You can technically, in theory, give Hashem a dira b'tachtonim, but it'll be a dark dira. Meaning you can build him his house, but you won't put in adequate lighting. Or you could give him his house in this world and have a lot of lighting. In other words, there are levels to the success of this project. Now, the fact that there is a Dira B'tach Toinim, that's what I mean, there is one or there isn't one. That depends on action. The action alone is what creates that. But the intensity of the revelation, how revealed Hashem will be in that Dira, that exists on a continuum, which is dependent upon the degree of emotional intensity that was infused into the performance of the mitzvahs. And that can have various different outcomes depending on how much kavana we put in. So here's the deal. Whether or not Hashem gets his dwelling place in the world, that comes down to action. And that's why action is so important, because you cannot give Hashem a dwelling place in this world without action. But once you've done the actions, the question is, okay, how well lit, quote unquote, so to speak, will that dira be? How revealed will Hashem be in that house in this world when it finally comes into fruition? Well, the answer to the question of how revealed, to what extent, how intense the revelation will be, that depends on how much kavana we had when we did the action. So is action important? Yes, action is really, really important. But is that to the exclusion of kavana? No, it's not to the exclusion of kavana. And in fact, if I were to ask you, why is kavana important? Well, let me just sum up this little summary here. Kavana is important. This is very important, at least to the way that I learned these chapters. Without this, I couldn't get through these chapters. Kavana is not important for a separate reason than why action is important. It's important for the same reason. Why is action important? What does it do? Creates a dir b'tach tainim. Why is kavana important? The quality of the aforementioned dir b'tach tainim. So it's not a separate reason. They're not in conflict with each other. They're really important for the same reason. Okay? Just their roles are a little bit different. When it comes to action, action is essential because it either is or isn't a dira b'tach tainim. But once you have the essential dira, you have one, and you want to get into the secondary question of quality, meaning the intensity of godly revelation, how recognizable will God be in the world when that dira is put into place, that's going to exist along a continuum that is completely dependent on how much emotion we infused into the performance of the mitzvahs. Okay, yeah. Okay, before I'm going to cut you off in the middle of your question, and before you finish, and I'm going to say to you, yes, your question was, haven't we already established that kavana is important? The answer is yes. In fact, by this point in Tanya, we've established everything. There are no new points. Everything from this point on is an elaboration upon points that were made. In fact, I could even go further than that, and I could say by the end of the first 8 chapters, all the major points have been established, and after that, we're going to circle back and elaborate. So before you even tell me the rest of your question, I just want to tell you, yes, you're right. We've already spoken about this, and we're going back to it and elaborating.
It seems like it's going against what it said earlier, because okay. Earlier we said, you keep doing it. Right, so it said if you have, let's say you eat and you make a bracha, but yeah. You don't have proper kavana, now you're bringing that part into the klipa, right?
So you're saying that's what we referred to it?
So we did the action, but because you didn't have the kavana, we lowered.
Yeah, well, if that's what you're referring to, it's much easier for me to explain to you why this is needed. You're saying that when you eat kosher food, you have to have the intent? Yeah, because then you're talking about elevating klipas noiga. We're taking something that is not inherently a mitzvah. So of course your intent is going to be much more necessary, because without the intent is the whole thing that separates it from a mundane act and a holy act. However, let's not use that example. Let's use an example of something that's inherently a holy act, whether or not you have intent or not. Like, let's say you're putting on tefillin. Mm-hmm. Okay, you're talking about eating a corned beef sandwich with mustard. So if not for the kavana, then how are you making this holy? But let's say it's putting on tefillin. Excuse me, sir, are you Jewish standing in the street corner? Oh, what's tefillin? You put... It's not klipas noga, it's already kedusha, right? So it doesn't need our kavana to make it kedusha. It's kedusha already. So then what's the role of the kavana? But you're still, your question is still right in premise that we have spoken about the importance of Kavanah already. We've spoken about it as early as chapter 3. Even earlier than that. We spoke about it in chapter 3 when we spoke about, when we explained the Koiches and Nefesh, and we explained what does the Chabad do and what do the Midos do. So we spoke about the emotions that a person has when they do a mitzvah. However, that's where I thought you were going to go back to. Let me explain to you what's a little bit different here. We're not talking about the emotion that makes you do a mitzvah. We're talking about the emotion that you add to a mitzvah that you're doing already. That's the way he basically explains Kavanah, especially in these chapters. You're doing the mitzvah. Now, the question is, how much emotional energy is going to be inserted into that mitzvah? Anything else to clarify before we try to jump in? Yeah, we each individual have to create it, and globally, yeah.
How does that work with the Kavanah and more light revealed? So right. Can an individual person experience more revelation?
Okay, so there is such a thing as a Gula Pratis, an individual redemption, where a person can be living in a Mashiach-like experience of reality already on an individual level before the global Mashiach for the rest of the world. But that's not what we're talking about. Here, we're talking about an objective phenomenon that indeed all humanity will observe, even those who did not participate in it. In fact, even the animal kingdom, like we read Yom Tov, Achron Shel Pesach, the Haftarah there, was speaking about what's going to be when Mashiach comes, and it says the wolf will lie down with the lamb, meaning to say not only human beings, all human beings will be aware of it, but even the animal kingdom will be aware of it. So the actual redemption is something that is an objective phenomenon which will be readily observable equally by all. In fact, that's what makes it unique. It's not like the revelations that go on, like right now in Gan Eden, in various different levels of heaven. Different souls have different levels of revelation, depending on what they put into their service of Hashem, so that's what they get back. But when we're talking about the actual redemption in this world, the Dira B'Tachtonim, in the actual physical world, that's something that everyone's going to see equally. Okay, so then to answer your question, it will affect everybody's experience of Dira B'Tachtonim. Everyone's experience of Dira B'Tachtonim is going to be affected by how much Kavanah individuals put into their mitzvahs. Now, will it be discernible, like, who's to be credited with how much revelation or the lack thereof actually ensues? I don't know. I don't know about that. But to answer your question, we're talking about the actual macro revelation of God that happens universally when Mashiach comes. And it is interesting that something like that, which will be seen by everybody objectively, would have been created by something that's essentially a personal subjective experience, meaning how much Kavanah you had or didn't have. But to answer your question, yes, that is what we're talking about. Clarifies it?
Yeah.
Okay. What else?
I just remember when you taught this class the first time, I think you went into detail of the kind of Kavanah and which...
Yes, the kind of levels of Kavanah. Yes, that's what we're going to get into now.
Oh.
Yeah, that's what I was warning you before, getting everyone scared. We're going to go into all levels of... Okay, so here's what I would like to try to do. I would like to start chapter 38. Fortunately, the beginning of chapter 38 is not hard because he sort of reestablishes the point that we already know from 35, 36, and 37. But we'll get that far, And then we'll be able to hit the ground running next week, God willing, not God forbid. God willing, with Hashem's help, please God. Okay, you see, I'm very scared of this. I really am. You'll see. You'll tell me as we go into it, you'll see. Yeah, I'm really concerned it's going to get tedious with the levels, basically all the levels, all the different levels and the... And they're essentially spiritual levels. So you're going to say, well, what does it matter ultimately if my mitzvah is pertaining to such and such level in the spiritual realms? Okay, you know what, maybe even I'll explain that since we brought it up. We're going to get into a lot of nitty-gritty technical, I called it earlier taxonomy, of levels of kavana and then commensurate levels in spiritual realms of where your mitzvah ascends to when you do it with a certain kavana. Why is that important? So here's, again, this is how I deal with these chapters. Once I understood from that sikh of the Rebbe that really the whole subject of kavana ultimately pertains to Dira B'tach Teinim, then I understood like this. When he's describing in the coming three chapters, when he's describing, oh, your mitzvah goes to Yitzira, oh, your mitzvah goes to Bria, like what level does your mitzvah ascend to? That might not be that, that might not feel that relevant to us. However, if you think about it in terms of, well, all of that is an investment in the ensuing Dira B'tach Teinim, that might help you. So think about it like this. Every time you do a mitzvah, with kavana, without kavana, you're building a brick in the Dira B'tach Teinim. However, how well that building is going to be lit, that's going to depend on the kavana, which we describe as the level in heaven that your mitzvah ascends to. But don't worry about the level in heaven your mitzvah ascends to. Ultimately, that's a intermediate way of describing the intensity that mitzvah is going to glow with when it becomes manifest in this world as a dwelling place. Okay?
All right. What?
The voltage of the lighting? Yeah, you could call it that. Yeah, you could call it. Yes, okay. So let's do a little bit of this. Let's just do a little bit here. Okay. Perek Lamed Ches. I did the whole printout, so I want to use my papers because I printed them out. Okay. V'hine im kol anichtav la'el yuvan heitiv psaka alocha arucha b'talmud u'poskim dihira lav kidibur dami. In light of everything we've said above, it's understandable now why our sages say that thinking is not like speaking. If you're doing a mitzvah that's a speaking mitzvah, like saying Shema or Birkas Hamazon, why is it not enough to just think the words in your brain? Why do you have to actually move your mouth in order to say the words? V'im kara kriya Shema b'machshavte u'belibe levad b'chol keicha kavonose. If you say Shema, for instance, in your brain and in your heart, lo yatzi yedei chayvas v'tzorech lachzav likreis. You've not perform the mitzvah, and you have to actually go back and say it. V'chein b'birkas hamazon d'oraisa, also the biblical commandment of benching after the meal. B'shar brachas d'rabbanan b'tefila, also, these are not biblical, but other brachas that we make, which are d'rabbanan and tefila. How come you have to actually physically pronounce the words and move your mouth and physically say it? Verbally articulate it. How come you can't just think in your word brain? And then conversely, if you do the opposite, if you say the words, physically pronounce, articulate the words without kavana, without the feelings, so after the fact, not you shouldn't have done it that way, but after the fact, you will have done the mitzvah, and you don't have to repeat it. You don't have to go back. Levad, except for the exception, Tefillah Shmoneh, except for the first line of Shema and the first three brachas of Shmoneh Esrei, where you do have to have kavanah. But other than that, it's funny. If you have kavanah, meaning you have the feelings and you even think it in your brain, but you don't physically say the words, you didn't do the mitzvah. But conversely, if you physically move your mouth and say the words and articulate them, but you didn't have kavanah, you did do the mitzvah. It's funny. K'di'isu b'reish perek beis d'brachas ad kan mitzvahs kavanah mikan ve'elich mitzvahs kriya v'chul. Like it says in the first, or the beginning of chapter 2 of Brachas, that there's something called mitzvahs kavanah, and then from here on out, mitzvahs kriya. You say the first line of Shema, you have to have kavanah, but after that, as long as you're orally articulating it with your mouth, you're fine. But the reason is, you all understand, he's reviewing a point that we already learned, the neshama didn't come to the world to be corrected through mitzvahs. Remember we explained that the neshama didn't need correction. The neshama is perfect. The neshama didn't come to this world for embodiment because of what embodiment could do for the neshama, but rather what the neshama could do for the world. The soul came here for the benefit, for the correction of the, what we call the nefesh hachayunus, the animating soul, or sometimes we refer to it as the animal soul, and the body. These things that are not holy, they need elevation. How does it technically work? It works through the letters of speech which the soul produces through the five organs or compartments of oral articulation. You know, the five different parts of your body which produce speech sounds? The throat and the palate and the tongue and the lips and the teeth. Yeah, those are the five compartments of speech. My mother's a speech pathologist. I've had many deep conversations about this. And also the body mitzvahs that you do with the other limbs of your body, okay? So this is all familiar. This is a review. There's no new ideas here. However, hold on. We just said, however, a prayer or a blessing without kavana is like a body without a soul. Interesting. So we're restating what we said in the previous chapter, that action, action, action. And in fact, even when it comes to mitzvahs that you do by saying words, it's so important to say, to physically say those words, to physically produce those sounds. However, there is such a concept that without any kavanah, without intent, without feeling, then the mitzvah is like, and this mashal, this metaphor is very important. It's a very apt metaphor. And we're going to come back to this again and again. It's like a body without a soul. In other words, there's a body of a mitzvah and there's the soul of the mitzvah. So if you do the mitzvah, meaning you physically perform whatever physical actions need to be performed in order to do the mitzvah, the soul, the mitzvah has a body. That's the body. But if you put in the feeling, that's the soul. It's not a hard metaphor to understand. Pirush, he explains. Ki kamei shekola burim sheba ilam hazeh sheyesh lehem guf neshama. Just like every entity in this world is made of these two components. Everything has energy and container. That's how I'll translate guf and neshama. Guf is the container, neshama is the energy. Everything has guf and neshama. Shehem nefesh kol chay v'ruch kol basar ish nishmas kol asher ruch chayim be'apav mikol bali chayim. Just like the Torah refers to, even the animals have souls. Obviously not souls like we talk about, like a neshama and tanya, but an energy, a spiritual energy. V'hashem mechayes kulam mahava ois mein liyesh tamid ba'er v'chayes shemashbiyohem bohem. And Hashem constantly renews and enlivens all of these things. In other words, ultimately, this energy is the divine creative energy with which Hashem is bringing these things into being. Now we're going even further. Not only animals, but even stones and dirt, inanimate objects. They have some type of spiritual energy that's keeping them from reverting into non-existence. So everything, even the stone, is made of the two components of body and soul. Obviously, the soul of a stone is not like the soul of a person or even the soul of an animal, but it's called a soul. It's a spiritual energy. And you have both components. Everything has it. Body and soul. Container and energy. The af alpikein ein erich v'dimnyin klal bein b'chines oir v'chayis hamer b'guf l'gabi b'chines oir v'chayis hamer b'neshama shi nefesh kol chay. There's no comparison between the Oyer V'chayis, the light and the life that's shining in the body, and the light and the life that shines into the soul. Obviously, we know that body and soul are two different categories, two different classifications. And the light, it's just intuitive. We all understand this on our own, that the light and the life, whatever that means, but the energy that makes the soul, or is the soul, is a higher grade of energy than that which makes the body. Right? Is that's readily understandable? Okay. The afshe b'shneihem, now we're getting to some technical stuff. The afshe b'shneihem oyer echad shava b'bechinas hester ponim. Now, they're both the same regarding Hester Panim. Hester Panim means the concealment of the face, the concealment of the divine face. They both have the same level of garment that they're enclosed in, which hides them. Because they're both happening in this world. And there's a certain level of concealment that this world has. World means concealment, right? The word olam is halem. World means concealment. And each world is a certain gradation of concealment. And the physical world, the lowest of all worlds, is not just the lowest level of concealment, but it is the most, I think I've told you before, the metaphor of translucent curtains right on the screen. So you have the compounding effect that by the time you have the last curtain, you have an opaque effect. So what he's saying is that the body and the soul are two different entities. Now the soul is a more spiritual entity than the body.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. However, just understand that the Hester Panim, the level of concealment, that's going to be the same for body and soul, because they're both, after all, we're talking about as they exist on the same plane. We're not doing an apples to, in a certain way, it's an apples to apples. I mean, it's apples and oranges because it's souls and bodies, but it's a soul and a body each on the same level of creation in this physical world. So to that extent, or from that perspective, it's apples to apples, and therefore there's the same level of concealment. You see already why I'm getting worried with this chapter. You're already confused. Okay, well let's just finish this little section here. Okay, so bebechinas hester ponim v'yiridas hamadreges b'shtal shel zeilim is medregel medreg b'tzimtzumim erabim v'atzumim. They're both the same product of the same amount of tzimtzumim. Tzimtzumim are the contractions, the condensations of divine light that happen in order to allow for a created existence. The tzimtzum is so intense until the divine light can invest itself into klipas noiga, into the neutral energy that's not holy, which is mundane, which makes up the entirety of this physical world. Now he says, what are we talking about? Called the We're talking about all the physical things of this world that are permissible. They're not forbidden. And then the impure stuff sort of get their life from the neutral stuff, because the neutral thing is an intermediate category. However, you should know, this is so tricky here. Yeah, it is. It's a reversal. But you should know that the hamshochas achayis, the life force is drawn down, that Hashem is shining into each thing through this levush, through this garment, ain't a b'shava, is not the same b'chulon b'bichin tzimtzum v'spashos, and all of them regarding tzimtzum v'spashos. And it is a reversal, but I'm going to explain why it's not. Ki b'guf agashmi v'adem ma'arish ki avonim v'ofer ha'hore hi b'bichin tzimtzum gadol asher ein kamayu. Because when you're talking about low-level things like inanimate objects, like stone and dirt, there's a much greater tzimtzum. It's such a diminished life force. It doesn't even express itself with growth, like vegetables. They can't run around, but at least they can grow. Stone can't even grow. Then you have vegetables. So there, the life force is not as condensed, so it can actually grow. And you get four levels of inanimate, vegetable, animal, and human. And they correspond to the four letters of Hashem's essential name, the Yud and the Hey and the Vav and the Hey. Okay. Let me explain why it's not a contradiction. Talking about two different things. You're talking about the Hester and you're talking about the Tzimtzum. The Hester is the curtain, the aforementioned curtain. All right? The Tzimtzum is a window. So there's the curtain and there's the window. If you have a big window, that's very little Tzimtzum. You have a small window, that's a lot more Tzimtzum. You have a ton of Tzimtzum, then it's not even a window, it's a peephole. You know, like at the hotel.
Why is that a lot of Tzimtzum? Because that's the opening?
Imagine you have a wall, and the only way that it lets in light is there's a little, someone just poked a little hole. You put a drill, that's it. And that's the only light that comes in through that whole wall. Okay? And then on top of that, you have the curtains. So those are two different factors. So what we're saying is, in the physical world, everything has the same amount of curtains. However, the tzimtzum is the size of the hole. Exactly. And very good. Very good. I'm so relieved you're with me. Right. And there's four basic sized holes. Daimim tzemei chai medaber. Okay? There's the inanimate, which is the least amount of light, meaning the most tzimtzum. Then there's the vegetative. See, inanimate doesn't express its life. It's alive. Everything's alive.
What's the vegetative called in Hebrew?
Tzemeach. Everything's alive, or it wouldn't exist. But life doesn't necessarily mean it's alive enough to express and manifest its livingness. It might express its livingness just by taking up space, like daimim. You follow what I'm saying? It's alive. Everything is, look, you look at the atoms are made of subatomic particles. The electrons, you know, you look at those, what are they made out of? Someone described it to me recently as, really, subatomic particles are tornadoes. What's a tornado made out of? It's a bunch of wind moving around, a bunch of air moving around, right? They're tiny miniature tornadoes that when you get to the most basic building blocks of matter, it's not physical, it's movement. Now, when you're zoomed out, it feels like solidity. It feels like physical things are solid. But really, all matter is made of energy. And every atom is made of these tiny little tornadoes of movement, of buzzing of energy. So think about it like that. Even the table is alive, but it doesn't express its life through having a life, walking around, talking, getting coffee, doing interesting stuff. But everything's alive. So Damim is the lowest level. Tzemeach is the next level. Damim is inanimate. Tzemeach is vegetative. Vegetative only expresses life in the most simple way, which is it grows. It grows. So you come back year after year, and the tree is a little bit bigger. As opposed to the rock, the rock isn't bigger. Although in the Tumulalaika story, what is it? What was it? Waskin Voxen on Regan? Tumbala, Tumbala, Tumbala Laika. You guys don't know Tumbala Laika?
Yes.
Yes? Voskin Voxen, Medele Vil by the Fregen, Voskin Voxen, Voxen on Regan. Am I the only crazy person here who knows this? What do you sing to the old people when you go to the nursing home? You have to sing Yiddish Mama of Offen Pripichik and Tumbalalaika.
Yeah.
What can grow without water, without rain? A stein, and then she answers, the clever girl answers. A stein can wachsen on the dragon, a stone. She's being sarcastic. She's saying nothing can grow without water. A stone, yeah, go, yeah. A stone grows without water, meaning it doesn't, nothing. You guys don't know this? Okay, sorry. Anyways, a stone doesn't grow. It just is. Okay.
So that has a peephole?
What? A stone is like a peephole.
Okay, then Tzemeach grows.
Then Tzemeach, it actually grows. So that's like a little like... Yeah, like the speakeasy, like when Al Capone style, they go, who's that? Right? Oh, not the cops. Okay, come on in. Then the balchai, the animal, that's like a normal window. And then a medaber, a human being, that's like plate glass window, storefront window. Okay. And these four levels, these four categories of tzimtzum, correspond to the four letters of Hashem's name, the Yud, and then the He, and then the Vav, and then the He. And we're going to speak about these as four levels of Kavana. Okay? We're going to speak about these as four levels, distinct levels of how much intent and mindfulness you put into your mitzvah when you do your mitzvah. Yeah.
You're saying that the amount of symptom that someone experiences, like for all men, it's the same, for all tzemeach, it's the same. But isn't it personal? Like,
so on okay, so now forget about inanimate vegetable, animal, and human, because we're not talking about those anymore.
Okay.
We're using these as words to describe levels of kavana. So therefore, there's a level of kavana that is by way of analogy compared to, we'll put it this way, one person did a mitzvah this minute, he did another mitzvah the next minute. At 1 minute, he was really, really focused, and the next minute, he was even more focused. And at the 1 minute he did a mitzvah, the kavana was on the level we call animal. And next minute he did even better, and the level of the kavana was on the level called human.
Okay.
But where do the curtains come in?
I'm saying like everyone has the same amount of curtains.
Curtains are all the same.
But you're saying that all categories have the same amount of symptoms, but my symptom could be stronger than yours, right? We don't have to experience the same amount of symptoms.
Yeah, don't worry. We're not going to compare from one person to another person.
Okay.
We're saying at a given moment, you have the ability to do your mitzvah with greater kavana. And how do we describe that greater kavana? We describe it with these levels that we just introduced.